Blog Talk Radio.
Hello everyone and welcome to another edition of the Off the Wall Podcast. I am Chris Sheeran. It is April 22nd in the year of our Lord 2013. And the New York Jets are no longer on an island that is making them pay top dollar to keep said island around. Darrelle Revis is now a Tampa Bay Buccaneer. And, you know, a lot of Jet fans, a lot of people that follow the Jets that I follow on Twitter, a lot of writers, beat writers, friends of mine, they're all, you know, they don't know how the Jets could do something like this. And I tend to think, how could they not do something like this? How could they not? To get the 9th and 13th pick in this year's draft, they already had the 9th, but now they pick up the 13th from the Bucks in the first round. They get a 4th rounder next year. Could be a 3 if Revis is on the Bucks roster the third day of next season. I really don't get any of that stuff. 6 years, $96 million. Nothing is guaranteed for Revis down in Tampa. And, you know, I was thinking last night, who could I get on? Who could I have on to talk about this? And then instantaneously, one of my best friends comes to mind. And I'll tell you why. Not only does he host his own sports show on Blog Talk Radio, the No Goal Sports Show, which is hysterical. And we'll get into that. He is one of the dons of the five families in the Bills Mafia. He is at Sambone73 on Twitter. Brian Sanborn, thanks for coming on today, buddy.
Hey, thanks for having me, Chris. How's it going today?
I'm great.
Honored to be on your show.
I'm honored to have you on, man. You know, dribbling down to Fifth Street, going down to Leonardine Park, you know, and Study Hall in South River High School, and here we are. Fast forward, if you could believe it, 20-plus years.
Yeah, a little paper football lunch. You know?
Yeah, a little knuckles, getting yelled at by Miss Tierney and Study Hall, yeah. Taking it way back. But now we have, you know, we have the creds, Brian. We could discuss this on a professional level. And,
sure.
You know, you've been a Buffalo Bills fan your entire life. And if anyone is a diehard Buffalo fan across the board, Sabres, Bills, it's the guy on the other end of this conversation right now. And from a team that plays the Jets 2 times every year, I figured he was one of the best people to bring aboard and talk about, and he's a New York guy too, so he could definitely talk to this. And the first thing, Brian, I just want to go back to my original point when I started this podcast. I don't see what the big hubbub about. You know, everybody's saying, you know, how could the Jets trade their best player? That one of our mutual friends was going to burn his Jets stuff because they did this. I just don't see how Jets fans could be this upset when their owner wasn't going to pay him when he became a free agent at the end of this year. That's number one. Number two, he can go to Tampa, Brian, and tear his ACL again in the third game of the season. And if he did that with the Jets, what the hell are the Jets going to get for him then? You don't know if he's going to be able to be that shutdown corner anymore. Tampa, as we said before we came on today, a big roll of the dice for them. No money guaranteed, but 6 years, $96 million, $16 million for a quarterback? That's a little high.
Absolutely. I mean, just to take this from as objectively as I can about the Jets, and you know how much I love the Jets. all joking aside, though, the only receiver that probably won't miss Darrelle Revis is Stevie Johnson, because he's one of the few guys in the league that actually owns Darrelle Revis, which is very rare. But having said that, Let's just back up for a second. Now, Jets fans are just a lot like Buffalo fans. They're very negative, right? They're very, you know, anything goes wrong, like when the Bills traded Marshawn Lynch, oh, it's terrible. Well, you know, Marshawn Lynch clipped a Canadian, you know, in a hit and run and had a gun charge in California. You know, he was a volatile guy, but they still thought it was negative. The Jets fan is very similar. Everything's woe is me, you know, and rightfully so. They've had a lot of bad things happen to them, right? I mean,
right.
The team in their same town, the Giants, are what they want to be, a team that's unassuming, that does the right things under the radar. and builds from the inside out. Look at the Jets roster right now, Chris. Is this team constructed as of right now?
It's a ghost town, Brian. You need offensive linemen.
Yeah.
You need defensive linemen.
Mm-hmm.
You need linebackers. You need a running back.
I mean,
that's a quarterback.
Absolutely. You know, a cornerback making 96. All right, listen, the Bills signed Mary Williams last year to $100 million.
Right.
Which, you know, for a defensive end, I would do that because he can impact so many different parts of the field. A
and he's
corner,
not coming off
one,
an ACL injury.
Absolutely. Listen, that is absolutely a great point. And to get this draft coming up, Chris, I call it the Geek Squad draft. And here's what I mean. It's not for the people that love to say, oh, RG3, Andrew Luck, all these great quarterbacks. No, this is the meat and bones draft. All right.
Mm-hmm.
You're actually better off picking where the Jets are. Because you're probably going to get better value, you know, maybe where, you know, certain, like Sharif Floyd from defensive tackle from Florida, maybe he'll slip. And he could be a Warren Sapp kind of guy. What if the Jets get a guy like that? And then at 13, what if they get an impact receiver to finally help poor Sanchez, who has no targets? I mean, the Jets
no
have
targets,
a lot. I mean, look at their side of the ball.
And Swiss cheese on his offensive line, with the exception of Mangold and Ferguson.
Absolutely, and this is a very, very good offensive tackle guard draft. Not even in the first round. It goes deeper into the second, third round.
Right.
You know, Chris, the Jets have always been obsessed. They were sort of like how the Mets used to be in this town, obsessed with the back pages. But the Mets maybe finally wised up. I mean, you know, the whole scandal side.
Well, they had no choice, yeah.
Yeah, but I think that you could see the Mets are finally getting some young players and they're doing their thing. Not to make this a Mets thing, but the Jets need to take a step back and say, look, New England's way ahead of the curve, right? The other teams in this division are you can get to them. But the Jets need a plan. They're sort of stuck in the middle right now. And I think
look,
this
Mike
is the
Tannenbaum
first step.
Was brought in here, Brian, and you know why he was brought in here. He was a salary cap genius, and he has basically Isaiah Thomas'd the New York Jets into oblivion.
Yeah. Or who's
so
the guy
I applaud I applaud Idzik. The only thing I think the Jets have ass backwards is the fact that Rex Ryan is still coaching this team. I can't get my head around that. If you're going to start over from scratch, why is this guy still on the sidelines?
Yeah, I mean, Rex did make two AFC title games, and quite honestly, see, everybody says, I think they did a disservice to that team. I thought the Jets, besides their quarterback, were probably the best team in the league one of those years. Those teams were loaded. I mean, I went to the game in San Diego where they beat Phillip Rivers and the Chargers. That defense was ridiculous.
Right.
And their offensive line, I mean, they just weren't blowing the Chargers off the line. You know, it was like just like flickering off. It was just incredible. I mean, how good this team was in a lot of different areas. You know, and Rex has kind of been living off of that. And he's very controversial. And, you know, but the players love him. I mean, he's a players coach. But,
one more point here, Brian. And it's the fact that, you know, not only did I read it on tweets, but I heard it on the radio here, local New York, a couple of hosts, the Jets are punting this upcoming season because they got rid of Revis. I got news for you. They were punting it anyway. Was Darrell Revis going to play quarterback?
They're basically fourth and 13 with the worst cap with Darrell Revis on their roster.
Unbelievable. That everybody thinks that Revis was going to be the linchpin for a Super Bowl run here.
You know what, Chris? I really think the Revis move here is a byproduct of the frustration the Jet fan has had over the last few years.
I get that.
Know, where, A, they've seen their team deteriorate in front of their eyes. B, they've seen the team in the same building win two Super Bowls. I know that is a factor. I think it's kind of a little bit of everything. I mean, I feel it with New England, right? I mean, I see them winning all the time, and it frustrates me.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, from a Jet fan point of view, it's typical woe is me Jeff fan, but I think they got good value for it as best as they could do. But the Jets need to continue with this rebuilding process. They can't just stop now. They're going to keep trying to get picks, trying to get players in here, and start building from the ground up. Because is Sanchez really going to be your quarterback after the season?
I was doubtful he was going to be the quarterback this year, but, you know,
yeah,
he's
I mean,
back.
The Tebow thing is ridiculous. I mean, just get him off the roster.
That was to grab the back pages from the Giants after the Giants won the Super Bowl. I want to get your comments on something I just heard on our favorite network, ESPN. And Jerry Rice was just on. And he just said the Jets are in trouble because they just lost one of their leaders in Darrelle Revis. Correct me if I'm wrong, Brian, but that really incensed me because, you know, I know players, they want to get as much money as what's coming to them. But name a year that Darrelle Revis didn't sit out. That's a leader?
Very
a
true.
Mean guy is a leader?
Yep. You don't
That's
see a
ridiculous.
Lot of the players that are leaders sit out like that. And listen, this is not saying that Darrelle Revis
Eli Manning took a pay cut.
Mm-hmm.
That's a leader.
Yep. I mean, and listen, even
and
Tom
I'm not
Brady's
just saying
player,
that because
you know,
I'm just bringing
yep.
up something that's local. You know what I mean?
Sure. I mean,
people know I'm a Giant fan, but that's how you lead. Okay.
Mm-hmm. You restructure your contract to help your team.
Right.
Out. That's really
right. And this guy has been holding the Jets hostage since he came into the league.
And you know, Chris, can I be honest with you? If your cornerback is your leader, you have more problems than you realize. It's almost like in hockey, if your goalie's your leader, you don't want that. That's just a Sabre thing. But you know what I mean? There's certain positions that you want. You want a quarterback or maybe a linebacker to be your leader. I just wouldn't want a corner. Corners are kind of diva-ish. I wouldn't want them as my leaders.
See, now here I have ESPN on as we do this podcast, and a New York writer just tweeted the Jets butt fumbled the Darrelle Revis situation. I don't get it. They're thinking that they didn't get enough value out of this guy. Now, look, talk about ACL injuries. Now, you get one side of the coin, Brian, where you get an AP who comes back from the ACL and has a ridiculous season, almost breaks Eric Dickerson's single-season rushing record. But then you also have the other side of the coin, and that's Derrick Rose of the Chicago Bulls. He hasn't seen the court this year coming back from an ACL tear that he had in last year's postseason. You know, every guy is different, and I know he went through his physical yesterday, and I know he passed everything, and the Bucks were happy with it. It doesn't matter. You know, this guy can go out there in week three, and I'm not hoping that it happens.
Yep.
God forbid. I mean, I don't want anything bad to happen to anyone, but at the same time, what are the Jets going to do here?
Yeah, I mean,
are they going to keep this guy and then let him go someplace else for nothing?
Chris, just from a personal point of view, I tore my quad tendon last Labor Day weekend, as you know. All right?
I remember that.
And my surgeon always told me, she said, everybody's going to heal differently, right? And I can tell you I'm on my way, but my leg just doesn't quite feel the same anymore, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you're a cornerback and corners shift around so much on the field, you know, running backs usually run straight, left, right. I just think it's really tough to pay $96 million and all the guarantee. I mean, here's the other thing. Do you think he would have signed with the Jets for that same contract, no guarantee?
Absolutely not.
He wouldn't have.
Absolutely not.
I don't think he would have. And because he would have thought he was owed something being a Jet. And I think he knew he was out of answers and he needed to take that risk with the Buccaneers. I mean, it's essentially a two-year contract. He'll get it restructured. And, you know,
listen, I know these guys have to react. I know they have columns to write. I know they have papers to sell or magazines to sell or whatever, or radio shows to get listened to. But, I have this podcast. I'm taking the exact opposite approach to this. I just think – and now there's some rumors out there. Samini tweeted that the Jets are interested in trading down to accumulate extra, even more picks. So, I mean, in what you call the meat and bones draft, it's not really the stellar draft that was last year. The Jets could really build their offensive line up. They could get another defensive lineman, maybe steal a linebacker in here. And you know, Mark Sanchez, he was serviceable with a line in front of him that protected him. If memory serves me correctly, the Jets got the two AFC championships when Mark Sanchez had an all-pro offensive line.
Absolutely. And, you know, the other thing about this draft, Chris, everybody talks about how there's no Russell Wilson in draft. Well, correct me if I'm wrong, Russell Wilson was a third-round pick last year. Now, I liked Russell Wilson a lot coming out of college, but the Jets can also draft a quarterback, maybe Landry Jones from Oklahoma. You could get a guy in your roster maybe to groom, you know, eventually in 1 or 2 years, because there's nothing on their roster that, to me, that has any tangible value beyond this season or maybe even next season. So, and with all the picks, they can get Mingo from LSU, who's a great defensive and linebacker hybrid guy. It'd be perfect for Rex Ryan's system. Those are the things they need to do. Let me ask you another question, Chris. There's
Absolutely.
A team in your division that made a big splash at corner. The last team to make a huge splash at corner, Nnamdi Asomugha. How did that work out for the Eagles?
Yeah, I know. I know. But there's also people who say, you know, he went from a system where he could play a lot of man to the Eagles where he played a lot of zone, and that was the issue. We'll find out, you know, this year with the 49ers if it was Asamoah or if it was the system.
Yeah, and, you know, and just from the Tampa point of view, Chris, I do commend them a little bit for taking a chance. You know, they're a team that's sort of mucked in the middle of the NFL. They're trying to sell tickets. I mean, they're playing in London.
Plus, they've got Breeze twice and Newton twice. And,
yeah, and, Matt,
and
the
Ryan
two receivers
twice.
Atlanta, which, yeah,
right.
So they do have a division that's going to be tough. But, I mean, Tampa's building something. They signed Vincent Jackson last year. They drafted the kid. I can't remember his name.
Hey, I have no problem with Tampa rolling the dice on this. I think both teams are going to benefit. If Revis stays healthy, I think both teams benefit from this deal, and I think the Jets did the right thing, Brian. Your final point on this, just tell me, did the Jets do the right thing, or were they wrong? Did they not get enough back for Darrell Revis?
Well, listen, I mean, you're never going to – when a guy tears his ACL, Chris, you're never going to get the value you expect. And what you alluded to before about the holding out and the knack that Revis has for this, there's some red flags there for some teams. To get the 13th overall pick in the draft, I was stunned. I didn't think they would be able to get that kind of value.
Hey,
I figured maybe they would have to get back a third or maybe a fourth. They didn't even do that. So while the knee-jerk reaction, Cromartie was tweeting out that this sucks, of course, players don't want to see their best players leave their team, okay? They're, you know, I don't care if you're a rookie or a 10th.
Well, they also know
you
if he can go, damn, I'm probably out of here too.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's like the team you work for, the Yankees. I mean, they're always looking to win now, right? Players want to win now. They don't want to wait. A draft pick is a draft pick. We don't know what it is. It could be, you know, Peyton Manning. It could be Jarrod Bunch that the Giants took years ago. I mean, it could be a bust. You never know who it's going to be. So, or some of those great, you know, Jet picks from the quote unquote glory years that I love so much, but they were horrible. So, I mean, but anyway, that's just a joke aside. But, you know, I think the Jets, it's tough as a fan, but when you sit back, when you're there Thursday night, kicking back, watching the draft, get something to eat, you're going to be happy the Jets made that trade.
All right, and what about you? I have to give you a Bills question really quick.
Sure.
Your thoughts on getting corn on the cob to run the offense here, and the excommunication of Mr. Fitzpatrick.
Okay, well, first of all, I'll make this quick. Fitzpatrick had to go, okay? Ryan Fitzpatrick is very limited in what he can do. He's a fringe starter, great number two in this league. He was getting paid like a number one. I mean, he's a Harvard grad. You know, he swindled $50 million contract out of him sometimes. But, you know, I like Fitzpatrick. I think he's a good guy. I think he really tried to do the right thing. But I just don't – I think the Bills need a clean slate. They got – Doug Maroney's a new coach who I really like so far. I love the attitude he's bringing to the team. But I got to be honest with you, Chris, I have no idea what this team's going to do in the draft on Thursday. Usually I have an idea. I mean, maybe Nassib at number 8 from Syracuse – maybe Matt Barkley from USC. I really don't know what they're going to do. This is a weird draft. They're in a weird spot. But as for Cobb, can you say Rob Johnson 2.0? That's pretty much
exactly. I mean, is this a sign that, you know, they need a GM that's in, you know, this century? Do they have to switch GMs here? Do they have to go in another direction?
I will tell you that they have a guy named Doug Whaley who's on their staff who was – the personnel guy for the Steelers. He is sort of the GM in grooming right now. Buddy Nix will eventually step aside with his, you know, Southern draw, which I absolutely find hilarious. But, you know, once they move on from that, Doug Whaley is very well respected with Pittsburgh, did a lot of good things, will probably take over, which, you know, I love it. So, but, you know, they got to get a quarterback. I mean, you got to think in the first two rounds they got to get one this year. I mean, Cobb is a decent stopgap. Maybe he can – he didn't have any protection in Arizona last year. I mean, that offensive line was
– porous.
You know, just to bring it way back, it was like Spotswood against South River back in the old days.
Wow.
But, you know, anyway, yeah, I went there. So, you know, I mean, the thing of it is it's really bad. So maybe, you know, maybe the new offense – I mean, Maroney's the guy who was the Saints offensive coordinator with Sean Payton. Sean Payton absolutely loves this guy. I'll give him a chance. It's like the Jets fan has to handle Revis like I'm handling the new Bills coach. Let's just see how it works out.
Yeah, let's see how it pans out. I mean, but that's what it's all about, the instantaneous reaction, and I'm glad I had you on today to talk about it. You brought up the Yankees, so let's go there next. And the podcast will be live till 1 o'clock, and then Brian and I will probably keep going. It's at Sambone73 on the Twitter. That's the at sign, Sam, S-A-M-B-O-N-E, 7-3. Old high school buddy of mine, a blog talk radio host for sports, the No Goal Sports Show, it's called, and he also blogs a bit for the Buffalo Bills, as you could tell with his breakdown right there. He will be an interested viewer in this draft coming up on Thursday and Friday in rounds 1 and 2. And Brian, let's talk about something that we both grew up talking about in our study hall classes at South River High School, and that is the New York Yankees. I wrote a blog before the season started, and all I said, Brian, was if the pitching stays healthy, it's the same pitching staff that led this team to 95 wins last year. I said if the pitching stays healthy, I didn't guarantee a playoff spot. All I said was the Yankees would be in the mix in September. First and foremost, agree or disagree with that sentiment?
I you know, at first I would have said no, but you know, now that I'm watching this team a little bit, And truthfully, I got to be honest. Living in California, it's a little tough for me to. I want to get the Yes Network on my Time Warner. I'm dying to watch Sharon on the Yes Network. I'm dying. but besides that, you know what? I think this could be a good thing for the Yankees. I think it's building a little character for this team. I mean, they're 11-7. I'm a little surprised they're that good right now, considering the amount of guys they have out. But you know, you got to credit, like we talked about, what Cashman's done so far. And Girardi's done a great job with this roster right now. And they still have some players, but, I think, that will hit their groove. So it's not like they're all playing above their heads right now.
That's a great point that you bring up and that my co-host at times, Joe Auriemma, brings up here on the podcast. And that is, you know, you bring guys in like Travis Hafner, Lyle Overbay, Vernon Wells. They're proven major league players. Now, they're not Mark Teixeira, maybe not Curtis Granderson. They're not going to provide a combined 71 homers for you. Even the three of them probably won't. But so far, generically, these guys, they want to win. You bring these guys in, they want to win. They're not, playing out the strings of their career. They want a ring. Last time I checked, Travis Hafner does not have a World Series ring. He played in Cleveland.
Travis Hafner, the other thing about Hafner, Chris, he's always had the tools. He just can't stay healthy. And if the guy can just stay on the field, or even as a DH, his bat's always been pretty good.
Well, I guess that's what they're hoping for, keeping him in that DH role, and moving Youkilis around, who had a little back tightness, and it was because of the turf. I don't know if he's going to be starting tonight. But another thing that I don't understand, and I want to get your take on as well, we never talked about this, all the vitriol the Yankee fan has for Kevin Youkilis, maybe I get it a little bit, but I don't get the broad view of it. This guy, I've always said that Youkilis and or Pedroia could play on my team anytime. And I know we have Robinson Cano, and he's a great player, and we don't need Pedroia. And I always have to say that because I don't want to tick off the Yankee fan. But Youkilis will do whatever he needs to do to make this team a winner. He's a gamer. He hates when he strikes out. He reminds me a lot of Paul O'Neill and how serious he takes this game and how he approaches it. And so far, he's been, he's been everything that I've expected him to be. He had a little bit of the back issue, up in Toronto, but until then, he's been swinging the bat well.
It's funny. I was looking at their numbers today, the Yankees as a team, and I don't get the whole Youkilis thing either. I mean, I was actually more upset when Clemens came here. I despise him a lot more than Kevin Youkilis, or even Wade Boggs, for that matter. When he sat down in 86, with a supposed hand injury as Don Mattingly lost the batting title and didn't get out. But, things like
wink,
that,
wink.
Right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, the thing – but, the Yankees are top five in average and on-base percentage now in baseball. And I think those are the things they kind of got away from a little bit. But that's what guys like Youkilis bring to the table. And, I know it's not money ball per se, but it sort of is. And I think that's why the Yankee offense is doing what they're doing. And
is the thing that gets me ticked off, Brian. You get – all these experts out there who do have a bigger platform than I have with their radio shows and, being on TV a little bit more. And they always say, they'll announce the lineup and they'll say, well, this isn't, exactly murderer's row. Were the San Francisco Giants murderers row in 2010
no.
and 2012? But, Brian, how did the San Francisco Giants, how did their season end up those 2 years?
Hey, Chris, I got an interesting stat for you. Last year's
Go ahead,
Giants,
give it to me.
The Giants from 2 years ago and the 98 Yankees, one of the most powerful teams in the history of baseball, you know what they all have in common? They didn't have one team, one guy that hit over 30 home runs on their roster.
Thank you.
Not one.
Thank you.
Not one. All right. I mean, you know, these are three. You know, what else? What more proof do you need? That I mean, home run hitters are nice. Don't get me wrong. But that's the Yankee teams in the late 90s. That's not what won them World Series.
No, they played small ball. They had guys like Mariano Duncan. You know,
mm-hmm.
that 96 team, it was so exciting. They had to come back, you know, down 2-0 against the Braves. Their back's against the wall, especially in Game 4. And I had Jimmy Leyritz on the podcast a couple weeks
yep.
ago, and we reminisced about that game where he brought everybody back, and you know that. And, you know, we were.
Oh, I'll never forget that for as long as I live.
We were at Simcoe's that night in Sayreville.
Simcoe's, yeah.
Yeah. And 6-1, down 6-1, after Kenny Rogers just spit the bit in that game. And
mm-hmm.
I left, and I was miserable going home because there was just no way. And Leyritz told me, he said, when we were down 6-1, we thought, okay, well, at least we didn't get swept. So that shocked me when he said that. If they're
mm-hmm.
thinking that in the dugout, you know, and I'm thinking about that in my car going home, you know,
yep.
that there's a problem. But then they start inching back.
Yeah.
Go ahead, buddy.
That's a very honest moment. I like that. I mean.
Yeah. You know, very candid, very honest. And then I get home, and I told Leyritz after the podcast, I didn't include it because I forgot it, but he caused a long and awkward hug between me and my younger brother when he hit that home run to tie it at six.
Yep.
There was a big time embrace between me and Michael.
Yep.
So
well,
he got
a
kick out of
that. I had an embrace for Game 6 at South River Pub when Charlie Hayes, you know.
Oh,
but that foul ball. Yeah.
I was speeding home from the MSNBC Christmas party at the Liberty Science Center in my red Sunfire, doing about 120 miles an hour to
the
get
red
to
Sunfire.
The pub.
Oh.
Yeah, so I could get to the pub in time
yep,
to watch
remember.
The final out with my friends. And I was in the car in the top of the eighth.
Yep.
And Mariano Rivera struck out. I forget who it was that he struck out in the top of the eighth, the end of the inning, but Sterling went absolutely bananas. Struck out swinging! And I was at the top of Prospect Street, and I said, okay, I'm going to make it. And as soon as I got in the bar, you were all in there. I mean, that 96 team, and it's so good to reminisce and think back and just remember where you were and the friends you were with. It was 18 long years, and God, we were five when they won in 78. So we
yeah,
knew that they
really
won, but
that.
We can't remember it. So that was just such – and everybody hates the Yankees for one reason or another. But 18 years for us, I mean, that was really our first championship of our lifetime.
Yeah, and, you know,
we were both born in 1973, and that was tremendous.
And consider the Mets won before we saw the Yankees win, which is a very unusual thing in New York. So, I mean, the Mets were the team of the 80s. And, you know, the 90s were just a dark era in general. I mean, for the beginning part, until, like, 93.
Oh,
so,
69 wins
yeah, I mean,
in 90. That
our,
was awful.
Yeah. That was absolutely. But, you know, the other thing about this Yankee team now, Chris, I mean, you know, with guys like DeSher and stuff, I mean, I don't know these guys, or A-Rod. I think there's less egos. I think they're kind of on a – they're just trying to win games and grind it out. And that's the thing about April baseball. You just don't want to be 5-15. You know, you just want to
no,
be.
No, you want to keep your head above
yeah.
water. And listen, since the Yankees have lost and we have 50 seconds left, I just want to tell our listeners that are listening live right now to Blog Talk Radio that Brian and I will go a little bit longer. We're not going to end the episode at 12:30 because Brian and I, if we could do one thing, we could talk.
Yeah.
Especially about sports. So we're going to keep this rolling. We're going to hit the Knicks and the Nets in the NBA playoffs. We have 30 seconds left of the live podcast, but we will keep it going. And if you want to come back and listen later, more than welcome. It'll be archived at yesnetwork.com. So having said that, going back to the Yankees really quick before we get to the NBA, Brian. They lost their first two series of the season. They looked listless and dead on opening day. They really did. I was there for the Yes Network, and I watched until like the fifth or sixth inning, and I left that day. But they just look like, wow, this is the Yankees this year. This is what's going to happen. This is the team that we're going to get. They lose that series to the Red Sox. They lose the next series to the Tigers, and they looked listless in those games in Detroit until CeCe Sabathia, who didn't have as good stuff on that Sunday and was going up against Justin Verlander. That's when you saw it, Brian. I think that's when you really saw the fight in this team. You know, it's not murderer's row. It's not the Yankee lineups that you're used to. But you don't need an all-star at every position and every place in the lineup to have a winner. You know, what are the Dodgers going through right now? They just lost six straight. Did they just beat the Orioles?
How much money is going into this Dodger team? There's more in this town right now. Both teams. Let's throw the Angels in there a little bit. Gus Hamilton's been a disaster. Absolutely, I'm hearing on the radio here in Los Angeles, and you know, you mentioned a good point. You know, sometimes you don't need to win eight in a row to turn around season. It could just be one moment, like you said with Sebastian. So you know what? Yeah, we can do this. And you know, and they beat a team that slayed them last year in ALCS that day. So.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that's going to turn the season for them. I'm just saying that was a big turning point early on in the season to get them going. They haven't lost a series since. They've won four straight.
Yep.
You know, and
Sterling has always talked about. Yep. Sterling has always talked about
win series. You hear players say it too. But here's the thing. You know, the Yankees have to look. Now they're in Tampa. They have three with Tampa before they come back home and take on Toronto again. But everybody was given this Blue Jay team, you know, basically propping up the World Series trophy with a passport on it and shipping it up to Toronto. That's why, Brian, I think predictions are silly, because something you can't predict are injuries, and every team goes through them every year. And the teams you see left standing at the end of the year are usually the teams that go through the least amount of injuries.
Yep. You know, and having said this, I mean, we talked about Hafner and also Wells. I mean, we don't know if these guys are going to sustain this kind of play either.
No, absolutely not.
We
got to
look at it both ways. But I think Nunez will get his game going. You know, Brett Gardner had his first stolen base yesterday.
Yeah.
That was shocking to me. But, you know, he'll start getting on the pass and doing his thing, and they'll start generating some more runs. And, you know, everything balances itself out. You know, they always say you play the back of your baseball card. That's usually what happens. So,
there's going to be a point where they're
going to need Jeter or they're going to need Tex at some point to really help them out. It's probably
And when they come back, it'll only make that lineup better, and then it makes the bench stronger as well. And I hate to make this comparison, but you know, when Brook Lopez went down in the beginning of the season for the Nets, you know, they had such a role going on with him starting and Andre Blatch coming off to spell him. They were the perfect 1-2 punch. When Lopez goes down with another foot injury, you just shake your head and you go, they were going so well. They lose the five straight, and I think it was 6 out of 7 or 7 out of 9 or whatever. Avery Johnson gets fired, and boom, you know, the whole season you thought was lost, and now they're the 4 seed in the
Brooklyn.
Eastern Conference.
Yep. Brooklyn is a very
so you really can't. Yeah, you really can't. You can't. This is why you can't like go too nuts, especially during a 162 game schedule. I talked to John Flaherty. I talked to Jim Leyritz. They both said they're really where they look at where a team is during the season is Memorial Day. I tend to look towards the end of July. You know, because that's when the Yankees in 2009 snapped their fingers. Cervelli hit that home run against the Braves, and they started turning their season around. So you can't really all and it's what you said. It's the point that you brought up. Just keep your head above water in April. And that's what the Yankees are doing so far.
Yep. I mean, there have been a lot of teams that have raced out the great – I mean, just go through the adages of baseball. I mean, the Orioles did this before they were good a couple of years ago. They did it a couple of times. Even into June, they were hot. They were in first place, and they just died off.
Yeah.
I mean, this stuff happens all the time. So, you know, I'm not – I mean, I do think these games mean something. I'm not trying to trivialize, you know, to diminish what they mean. But, I mean, in the grand scheme of it, when the Yankees lost yesterday, I'm not throwing stuff around the house. You know what I mean? Okay.
There's no
need.
Yeah,
they won 2 out of 3. Yeah, I'm not melting down on Twitter like some people do. every single moment that the team does. And I understand you're a fan, but there's a fine line between fan and just
madness.
I hate to make the comparison, but it's like Chernobyl when the Yankees lose on Twitter. I mean, everybody's
absolutely
melting down. I mean, it's pitch.
You know, you
pitch.
Mentioned chemistry.
It's not even
yeah.
game to game.
Chemistry is such a big part of sports. I mean, you and I, we don't even talk about hockey, but chemistry is a big thing in hockey, as you know. But also, it's kind of funny. Like, I'll give you an example with the Knicks. You know, amazing how much better they are without Amari? Which is weird to think because he's such a good
yeah.
player. But it's just, I'm afraid when he comes back, something's going to go wrong. I have that deep-rooted feeling in my mind.
Well, then you have another player who wants the ball to go through him. But I think when he came back after his last injury, I think he had the right mindset. I think he was
mm-hmm.
in the mindset of, you know, I'm going to do whatever it takes to make this team
yep.
win. And you saw that, Brian, between the time he came back, he got his legs under him until he got hurt again. Was he getting his touches? Yes, he was. But he was rebounding a hell of a lot more than he was scoring. So I think, especially now in the playoffs, I agree with you to a certain extent that when he comes back, it'll add a little extra, okay, well, we have to get Amari the ball when he's in. But I don't really think it'll mess up the flow.
Mm-hmm.
The flow of this team runs first and foremost, and, you know, the alpha and omega is Carmelo Anthony.
Yep.
And they were a different team against the Celtics in the second and in the fourth quarter. In the second quarter, there was no ball movement. This Knicks team,
yep.
if they're going to compete for an NBA title, and let's face it, compete with the Miami Heat, if they get by the first two rounds,
yep.
Carmelo Anthony can't live up to his nickname that, you know, unnamed Nuggets were calling him when he left Denver, Sticky Fingers. He has to
yep.
keep the ball moving like he did in that fourth quarter of game one against Boston.
Yep.
That's the way the Knicks are going to get open looks, and when they get the open looks, you pray, Brian, that it's not fool's gold from that three-point line and they start sinking some.
Yep. You know what I realized on Saturday? I realized that Mike Woodson is a really good coach. Because the matchup zone the Celtics played were giving the Knicks a lot of problems, like you said, in the first half, where they just couldn't,
mm-hmm.
They're not giving them the space from three. But I just like the adjustments Mike makes, and I like his temperament, and, you know, he preaches defense. I mean, look at Rasheed Wallace staying on as an assistant coach because he just respects Mike Woodson so much. I mean, that just speaks to
what tremendous. He wants another ring, too.
Yeah, I was really excited. I mean, that was an emotional game for Boston for obvious reasons, you know, the
yeah.
whole bombing thing. And
mm-hmm.
I know sport. The victory of Saturday, and this is what I think some sports fans miss, okay? There was a Knicks fan I talked to on Twitter. She's great. She goes, I almost feel guilty rooting for the Knicks. I said, why? You know, the victory of today is that Boston fans are able to watch the game in peace. That's the win.
Yeah, and the Celtics are
yeah.
out there playing.
Yeah. Yeah, and the Celtics are out there playing, and we're not canceling games because of some crazy idiots
right.
who decide to start boxing.
That is
you know.
That is the best point I ever heard right there.
Yeah, it's just
you hit the nail on the head.
Victory that the Red Sox can open Fenway Park, you know, the majestic palace that it is, and it is. It's one of the greatest old stadiums ever.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that they're there, that's the victory. You know, I never got that whole concept, well, I want to win for Boston. Well, okay, yes, but at the same time, you're a fan of your team. They don't feel guilty because of that. So.
Well, I'll tell you right now, I'm not rooting for the Celtics.
Oh, no. But, you know, that kind of win for the Knicks was not pretty, Chris. But those are the kind of games I always worried about with this team because of how Melo likes the ISO and J.R. Smith sometimes gets out of control. But you know what? They stayed with – they had little moments, but they got it together and they gutted it
out. I really think
– that's kind of stuff I'm looking for from the Knicks.
Yeah, Mike Woodson, I think, Brian, is the perfect blend of players coach and disciplinarian. I think he splits
oh, yeah.
that right down the line because he's not afraid, and he said it in the beginning of the season. I know mm-hmm. I have a bunch of stars on this team. If you're going to complain about your playing time, you're not going to be here.
Yep.
He said that, and then you know if J.R. Smith starts to get out of control, it's going to be a Reggie Christmas situation. Get him out.
Yeah, absolutely. They could put Chris Copeland in at the two. He could play anywhere. So
exactly.
It's not a problem.
Exactly.
Yep.
He's been on fire. And Reggie Christmas, by the way, is our former high school JV basketball coach, for those of you scratching your heads. And if you've made it this far into the Off the Wall podcast on YesNetwork.com, I am talking to one of my best friends of all time, Brian Sanborn. He is at Sambone73 on Twitter. He's a member, a proud member of the Buffalo Bills Mafia. That's hashtag Bills Mafia, by the way. Also a Sabres fan. And if you know about the Sabres, you'll understand the title of his show on Blog Talk Radio, No Goal Sports Show.
And I have a little extra part to that, where your opinions are never disallowed. Because I'm so excited by Stars won the Cup in 99. So let's get all the cameramen on the ice so there's no replay. I'm not bitter.
That is
no,
tremendous.
But, you know, Chris, you spent this whole show propping me up. It's time to prop you up, you know?
Oh, stop.
No, listen to me. Listen to me, all right? We got a couple.
All right.
I am so proud of you, man.
Thank you.
And our town is, too. So many people, I always knew for so long you would make it in this business, okay? And we've talked a lot about this for many, many years, since the days we went to the gym, we worked at MSNBC. Right?
Uh-huh.
They did the Ted Nolan skit where I gave you the Sabre jersey, remember? Right? Or the Sabre jersey and all that stuff. You know? All the old things.
Oh,
but no, but in all seriousness, dude, I am really proud of you, man. You have done a great job with the show. You do a great job on the S Network the times I've seen you. When I'm able to, I'm hoping to move so I can get a dish so I can get the S Network so I can start watching you on TV some more often.
Well,
so.
I hope you move back to the East Coast. I'm still hoping for that. I'm selfish.
Well, anything
I can't
is
help
possible.
It.
We'll talk about that
because
off the air. So.
I got to tell you that, Brian, you want to talk about intense sports fan. I got to give you a quick anecdote. And if you've made it this far, it's only good news for you because you'll love this, especially if you're a Knicks fan, especially if you were a Knicks fan back in the mid-90s when they had the classic battles with the Indiana Pacers. We used to watch these games. Basically, how big was your mom's TV in the TV room in the apartment?
20,
it had to be what?
Maybe 25 tops.
Maybe 25 inches, 27-inch TV. This is the standard def area, boys and girls.
Yeah.
This is not HD, by the way.
Yeah. No
so
DVR to replay the play either.
No. Reggie Miller connects on a shot. And he goes up and starts talking trash to Spike Lee. Brian pops up off the couch, quick as a rabbit, goes up to the TV. NBC shows the slow motion replay close-up of Miller, basically telling Spike to shut up. Brian proceeds to spit on his mother's television and bring the entire apartment down to its knees in laughter. Those, my friend, those were the days.
And they still are. We're just a little more in the control these days, though.
Yeah. Reggie Miller had a big loogie on his forehead. It was tremendous.